Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and bar sports. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined this week by my fellow adventurers. Guy English is here. Hi, Guy.
How's it going?
It's fine. Yeah.
Good.
Thanks.
I spoke to you earlier this week for the rebound, so I found myself not remembering for a split second what show I was on.
Like you're having a little like out of podcast experience there?
Yeah, a little bit. I couldn't come up with a quip.
Everything's fine. Decide. It's a safe place. John Moltz is also here. Hi, John.
I'm calling from beyond the time stream.
Oh. How are things there?
Yeah,
please. They're not any better.
Oh, can you take us with you?
Terrible.
I hate to tell you. They're just as bad as things are where you are.
I think what you mean to say is fascism is back.
Fascism is back. You mean the thing that I spent was fighting 10 years ago?
I do love this show.
We are back to discuss this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 7, Episode 10, Stolen. Not to be confused with the German festive bread, Stolen, which has two L's.
And is now pretty... I'm hungry. Thanks. Yeah,
you're welcome. That's what I'm here for. I believe that none other than yours truly is on deck for recapping this week, so I shall begin forthwith. We start at a bar. In fact, probably, I believe, the bar that everybody hangs out at.
It is definitely that bar.
Yeah, the former speakeasy, where there's a guy playing darts, and our old friend Nathaniel Malik shows up to recruit him. And if you didn't, as I did, immediately write in your first sentence of notes, "That's John Garrett, isn't it?" then, well, maybe you're not paying attention.
I did not know after, immediately.
I immediately knew. And if you also found yourself thinking, man, that guy looks a lot like John Garrett and does a pretty good Bill Paxton impression, that's because it's his son, James Paxton. Who is really, really does a nice job of capturing that character there.
Yeah, because I did. I mean, like, I thought this guy's really good. Why? And then I thought, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And I looked him up and was like, oh, yeah, sure enough.
James.
I love the idea of getting paid to impersonate your dad.
It must be kind of melancholy, of course.
It is, yes.
Dad passed away 3 years ago.
Right.
Oh, wait.
But
I'm
also
sorry.
Touching.
Yeah, he
I
did.
Think.
Yeah.
But nice.
Yeah, sorry.
But nice.
I thought it was like a more of a teasing thing. I forgot that Bill Paxton passed away.
Yeah. I mean, and there was an interview I read several weeks ago where they were, I can't remember who they were talking to on the cast. It might have been Clark Gregg. Talking about like, yeah, we love the idea of working in various things. It'd be great, you know, obviously to pay homage to Bill Paxton, of course. And I was like, that's weird that you just dragged that one out. But no, they knew exactly. Yeah, they know what's coming. Anyways, Nathaniel recruits John Garrett by, you know, showing him that he's got superpowers and telling him his future, where he's going to end up betrayed by S.H.I.E.L.D. and joining Hydra. John Garrett is interested. Meanwhile, at least part of the team is back at the lighthouse. All of Deke's recruits are headed to the academy because it turned out they weren't officially in S.H.I.E.L.D. because Deke did not have that authority. And they mention Roxy, who is there, mentions that she'll see them all at the Triskelion, which apparently will be opening ahead of schedule. Coulson says they need to put the time
I love
back.
That Roxy cleans up into like a nice, good, I don't know if it was a pantsuit, but if she was like professionally Scully FBI dressed, you know?
S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Yeah. Official.
Yeah. It was kind of just a fun, because for a second, I'm like, who is that? I'm like, oh, it's Roxy. That's awesome.
Mac defers to Coulson, who says they need to put the timeline back.
It doesn't just refer to him. He's like, enough of this. Just tell us what to do. Like, he's...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We'll talk about it after. Defers
to him, is what I said. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like a... It's not just like, oh, you've got a better idea, let's go with it. It's... more of a broad, like, okay, we're just going to listen to what
I think
you
you'll find
say.
The definition of defer covers this eventuality.
Oh, God. I don't. I swear to God, I'm trying to ask yes and you. I'm trying to, like, emphasize it. Like, it's an emphatic deference, not a reluctant deference. Okay.
Yes.
How about that?
We're good. Perfect.
How about I use my words?
Yeah. That's good. This is a podcast. Okay. Words are great on this show. Meanwhile, Daisy and Gemma and Sousa unpack into the lab. Sousa is very impressed by the advanced technology, whereas Gemma and Daisy, less so. It's the 80s. Sousa volunteers to take Daisy's bag after a little urging, and Gemma notes they have something has passed between the two of them, perhaps. Daisy quizzes Simmons about the implant and about the last place that she, the last thing she remembers, because she says that during one of the time loops when they removed the chip, Simmons was inconsolable and devastated, and she doesn't know why. Back in the command center, after discussing matters, they send the coordinates to Jiaying, who appears with Gordon before Mei can tell Daisy that she has a secret sister. Elsewhere, back at Afterlife, Nathaniel shows Garrett the time stream where Sybil is and offers to show him his future, and Garrett gets the whole treatment there. Gordon is going to take Coulson into Afterlife to do recon because Coulson is recyclable. And Jiaying, they almost get out of the conversation until Jiaying says, "You have to bring back my daughter," and Daisy kind of loses it. Mei fills in Daisy about the whole thing with Korra and the possibility that she had committed suicide in the original timeline, which is why they didn't know anything about her, and says they're going to leave Daisy behind to protect Jiaying. Nathaniel is still stealing powers. He is giving a mercenary named Durant Lee's powers. I have my notes that there is a mercenary named Durand who works with Batroc in the Winter Soldier. I don't think it's the same guy, though. I thought maybe it was the tip of the hat, but timeline seems to be off. Nathaniel wants Korra to kill Lee, which she hesitates, but eventually does, burning his brain or something. Gemma surprises Deke, who is working on the time drive, and starts to wonder if they were in fact getting information from Fitz, or if they were just somehow following the chronocoms automatically. She starts to theorize that maybe she put in the implant just because the memory of, there were memories too hard to deal with, the sort of unspoken idea being that Fitz is dead. Deke tries to reassure her, but she still seems questionable. Gordon jumps with Coulson into Afterlife, but Nathaniel immediately shoots Gordon because he knew they were coming to this spot, at which point Coulson realizes that he has the time stream. Coulson tries to give his good guy pitch to Nathaniel, who is not buying it. He's given Gordon's powers to Garrett. Garrett is very cheery here. "They let me watch you die a bunch of times. Really improved my mood." Meanwhile, Daisy and Sousa have a conversation about the 21st century, where Daisy points out, "It's not all good. Fascism is back." You mean the thing I helped wipe out 10 years ago? Sousa convinces Daisy to talk to Jiaying because this might be her only opportunity. She decides that that's good advice. Garrett teleports and has basically figured out how to use the powers. Daisy talks to Jiaying, and Sousa basically spills the beans about her being an inhuman. And Jiaying tells Daisy about Korra, and Daisy confides in her about her mother, which is, of course, her, though she doesn't know it. And Jiaying says, I don't know what's up with your mother, but sometimes trying to do the right thing comes out all wrong. Garrett teleports Nathaniel into the lighthouse with him, where they find a box of t-shirts for Deke's band. I saw these guys open for Twisted Sister. Coulson's going to bust out of where he and Gordon have been imprisoned, but Gordon teleports him out. Unfortunately, that wears him out, and he dies. Mei runs into Garrett in the lighthouse, and they have a little fight. Mei seems to have Garrett on the ropes until he remembers he can teleport, but he says something cryptic about looking for an open-minded woman to go on a road trip. Mei assumes that means Jiaying. She contacts Daisy. Daisy is trying to get Jiaying out, but faces off with Nathaniel. Yo-Yo meets up with Mac and Coulson, and she is so fast she manages to stab Durand with his own new appearing knife power, which is pretty cool. Nathaniel spills the beans on Daisy being Jiaying's daughter and their entire history together. Jiaying sucks the life out of Nathaniel, but in return, he snaps her neck. Daisy powers up and is looking like she's about to bring down the entire lighthouse when Mei shoots Nathaniel in the arm, but he escapes. Garrett teleports in and takes Gemma before Sousa can stop him. Coulson goes to find Korra and says that Sybil told her all about Daisy, and Coulson just goes off and ices her, which may or may not be her plan. It's unclear. Garrett and Nathaniel take Daisy on the Zephyr, where it turns out the Deke is still working on the time machine and doesn't realize it until they've been hijacked, until it takes off and he is alerted via radio from Mei. And of course, now they have a time machine, which is not great. But they need Simmons to take them to Fitz, because Sybil has calculated that he's basically the only thing that can stop them. Dun, dun, dun. So.
Do you guys see Stargirl this week?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we doing our picks?
Yeah. Guy's thinking.
I don't want to jump to the rating, but so yeah.
No. I mean, I like the inclusion of Garrett, and I really like the fact that they managed, you know, that they were able to get his son to play him. I think that's a nice touch. I think that's the best touch that they could make if they were going to use that character again, since the actor is dead.
I agree.
And it was a nice homage, and it's a nice bit of continuity from the earlier seasons in terms of finding, as Coulson puts it, you know, bringing up our greatest hits, essentially.
Right.
But I will say, to get ahead of what I think Guy might be thinking, this episode, it's not unimpactful. Like, some big stuff happens, but it also kind of feels like connective tissue for the rest of the season. Like, there is stuff that needs to happen to get us from point A to point B. And it's not that important things like Jiaying's death, for example, don't happen within the episode. But a lot of it feels like this is the setup for the last three episodes, in which we're finally going to figure out where the hell Fitz is and what's going on with that, and resolve the whole sort of, like, the season and the show. So there's a bit of a breather here almost before we get into, you know, the big sort of world-changing events, presumably, of the end of the show.
Yeah, your clairvoyance has served you well.
Oh, thank you.
I felt like there was a bunch of stuff moving around. The death of Jiaying is pertinent, I guess, but that fight didn't move me at all. It was very kinetic. It didn't have what this show so often does so well.
The one in the hallway, you mean?
The one in the hallway.
Yeah.
Like, they do like a wind power, whatever, the quake power, and then
they do a sort of tit for tat, and then it kind of ends.
Snap her neck, and like, that's it.
Right.
And then bullets come in, like, as she's powering up. So we don't even get the catharsis of watching her rip down the whole lighthouse, which I thought would have been cool. Or
expensive.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. And then the story. Yeah, exactly. Then now we're going to do a bottle episode, Daisy. Thanks a lot. But yeah, so I don't know. I also the bad guys have a little bit of a look at Trenchcoat Mafia vibe going on that I'm just not gelling with.
I don't think they're like the best bad guys, really.
No.
Yeah, I mean, their plan
I like Garrett being there. I like that part. I'm not really sold on Malik for some reason.
I like the actor, but his plan is anarchy.
Right,
like,
exactly.
It's a little underwhelming.
I'm fine with the actor. In fact, I think when he first appeared, I gave him props. I thought he was kind of scary. But it's landing, like, they're grinning from ear to ear a lot, you know? They just feel like idiotic kids. They feel like the thing that kept coming to mind while I was watching it was, I don't know how often you guys watched, or if you watched Buffy at all. There was a season where there was just a bunch of nerds in the van that aren't, like, felt like that. It's like, okay, these guys are dangerous. I won't get into Buffy spoilers, obviously, since that's fresh on everybody's mind these days. Also, you will not believe who Charlotte marries. And does Mr. Big ever come through? We'll never tell you. but it's like, I don't know. It's just not really landing for me. Like, the level of danger there, while we see it on screen, I mean, he murders Jiaying. Is that her name? Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it. I don't feel a threat other than, like, these are a bunch of idiotic.
The thing that I find kind of weird too is that we still supposedly have the Chronicoms out there, but aren't any Chronicoms anymore. There's just Sybil in a box.
Yeah, who's playing Johnny 99? And it's just not. It's for Dan.
It's the only song she has. It's on repeat. But I mean, I think that's kind of what they're going for, though, right? It's like that Sybil is using Malik for her
own. Yeah, I know. But I mean, I don't even understand her like her end game anymore, because she has nobody. She has no body. She has no henchmen. She has no, she wants the world for the Chronicoms. There are no Chronicoms. There's just her.
Are there Chronicoms who are not in that ship that they blew up? Or was that all of them? I was unclear on that.
I don't know. Maybe there are. So are we saying that there are Chronicoms in space someplace?
Chronicoms in space.
Yeah, we'll just go with that. Like the Dalek, Cybermen, like Orc, whatever.
Can you ever really kill?
There's always more of them.
Can you ever really kill a time traveling robot? That's my question.
Time traveling dad did it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Is that even canonical, though? I'm not even sure.
I don't know, because it's not like he killed him. He killed him with love, which was really what that whole episode
that's how he did
was
everything.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really true. What the whole show is about.
He made a pie with love that one time.
He did. Yeah.
It was a weird episode.
It was a little weird. Yeah.
It was a good pie recipe, though.
That's true. That's true. You could find it online for a while. It was in like Usenet groups.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Binging with Babish did one. Like they recreated it. Weird shout out to like a YouTube cooking channel, which I do enjoy. But I don't know. This just didn't land for me. It didn't land.
There's things I really like. I mean, I don't know. I didn't dislike this episode.
No, me neither.
At all. I mean, I liked the episode because I liked the interaction with Jiaying. I kind of liked circling back to that whole thing, I think her stuff landed a little bit more for me in this episode than came to fruition a little more here than earlier.
It feels like they remediated her character a bit from her appearance in season two.
Yeah.
And that was nice because it was an opportunity to sort of revisit that and say, like, you know, maybe she kind of got short shrift in season two and we never really got to see her as she was. And so,
yeah,
I thought that was an interesting opportunity.
I agree. And like we said, we've been closing out characters. This certainly closes out a part of the Daisy character.
Mm-hmm.
But the episode I just felt like it was a vehicle for that. And even that didn't land particularly well for me. Like, I also don't understand, why is Sybil doing this? Like, why is her proxy force these?
I agree. I don't like, get these. I don't get the bad guys.
I assume that it's because this was just like, you know, kind of the best available, you know, the force that was most likely to be able to take down SHIELD, essentially.
So to what end? Like, the idea is like, because these guys aren't even Hydra. They're eschewing the values.
Well, she tried Hydra.
Right.
She tried Hydra and it didn't work, right?
Right. Because, and in this episode, it's sort of interesting. He's like, Nathaniel's like, well, Hydra had too many rules, which is okay. I guess that's sort of an interesting observation in that, like, they do sort of have a philosophy, right? Like, they're clearly very, very evil.
But they're organized.
They seem to, they're organized and they seem to think that they're like, I mean, first of all, it helps that it's Robert Redford delivering the lines, but you kind of believe that he's like, no, we're just going to do this through strength, right? That's sadly not too far off an argument that you may see made these days. I'm trying to be very genteel about that. But it's not that super crazy. So it's interesting in a way that's like, look, even Hydra wasn't that corrupt that they would just jump in with Chronicoms that wanted to destroy Earth. But this guy seems to be on a very short-term power grab, right? And maybe that destabilizes everything to the point that it's easier for them to take over in the future. Is that it? Like,
It's not shipping stingers. He's an anarchist, right? He doesn't really have a plan, right?
Yeah,
he just wants to mess things up.
Yeah, but Sybil should. Sybil should have a plan.
Yeah, well, I think she's just using him as like a, you know, a wild dog to accomplish to take down SHIELD. And,
so that's like,
and
literally
then she
like
can step in.
So she's opening the door and she's showing the bull into the China shop.
Yeah,
and then hoping to be able to make out with a cash register,
or she's planned
profit.
Yeah, and then step three. No, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think we've seen the end game. I'm not convinced that we, you know, there isn't one. But this episode in particular does feel like it suffers a little bit from table setting to get to us to the, you know, the next few episodes. And I think they do a good job, like John said, with a lot of the character interaction in this episode in terms of bolstering the otherwise what could feel like a little bit falling flat or just unremarkable, I guess. It's not that it was bad. It's just that this has been a season with a lot of standout episodes. And so an episode that's merely good or, you know, fine doesn't quite rise to the same level as a lot of the truly excellent episodes that we have seen this year.
Yeah, I just think with only, well, now three left, I would have liked it to hit a little harder. That's all.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
I guess, look, I think, well, we'll talk about it when we come to the ritual, but, you know, I'm grading on a scale at this point because the show is phenomenal. I don't know. Like, when this ended, were you guys excited?
I mean, I was excited in the sense that I'll say my sort of thing that I feel like I keep harping on this season is just like, I cannot believe they held Ian DeCastiger for so long. Like, I can't believe he only gets like two or three episodes. I'm bummed because I feel like he's such an integral part of the show that it really feels like they sidelined him. And I certainly hope he's not dead because that would be really anticlimactic. I assume not.
I feel less like he's dead now, though, than I did last week, I think.
Right. It's just, it feels like, I love the cast, don't get me wrong. I like all the characters who are there, and it's not suggesting that he's some sort of necessarily linchpin that holds the entire show together, but I do miss his presence. I think he contributed something to the show, which is missing a bit this year, and it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I agree. And we've only got very few of the originals left. Three, basically, right?
We have Daisy, or currently, we have Daisy, we have May, we have Coulson, we have Gemma.
Gemma, sorry.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gemma and then Fitz. Yeah. So, okay. Still, okay. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I feel like
we don't have the Hawk people on Legends at all.
that's good, though.
Either Hawk person.
I know. That's rough.
Yeah.
I say, honestly, characters that I wish that had made an appearance in the end of this show, who I assume did not, Bobby and Hunter, I kind of wish that we had gotten squeezed them in for a little bit.
That'd be nice.
I always enjoyed them. Poor two characters who got two attempts at spinoffs that both never made it to a pilot.
Can I admit something to you, Dan? When you said Bobby and Hunter, I flashed to Supernatural. And I'm like, wait, you want Bobby to be on this show? I'm like, yeah.
I mean, actually, Bobby would be great on this show.
Yeah, he'd be awesome. Yeah. Yeah, and they wanted to set them up as like a spy thriller spinoff, right?
Yeah, it didn't work. I'm surprised that we haven't gotten Ward like in some capacity.
The way that they managed to shove Ward back into the show.
I mean, they're rewriting the timeline, so that option is there. Like, part of me wondered if they would try to go like stop him from like killing his brother or something or whatever.
And that was my first thought when we saw Garrett, was that it might be Ward, but I did the math in my head and was like, no, it can't be Ward. He would be too young.
Also, they wouldn't cast some random dude.
Yeah.
If he's going to be super young, I mean, maybe they would have. Going to do it like a teenage Ward, they would have to recast it, of course.
Yeah, but they had one, right? When they were standing around the well, they had a guy.
Yeah. There was an older one. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think they would reuse those six years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Kids are 42 now.
I guess part of me was like, I like the idea of like, hey, we've got a time machine. They're digging up all our old foes. Maybe we should go dig up some old allies or something. Like, that kind of feels like a fun opportunity, but they haven't really done that. So yeah, I don't know. I have no idea where the last three episodes are going. I will say that much.
Well, there's a lot of reacting, right? Like, there's not a lot of like our
proactive.
Our heroes are not terribly proactive. They do go back to go to find Xia Ying, and then they go back to what's the name of that place? Afterlife.
Yeah.
But they're still like on their heels from trying to chase around these bad guys.
Yeah, you want them to have some sort of agency by this point.
Right? Well, yeah, like I mean, I think this is the point. I will say at this point in a series and sort of like the arc, I feel like you need to get them to the rock bottom point, right, before they have their turn, right? Like that's how you structure this. And so I think that's one reason
we've all seen Best of Both Worlds.
Yes.
And he did it.
I was going to compare it to like Infinity War, but I guess
I was going to say Empire Strikes Back, but that went for Star Trek.
Yeah, you need to have your characters on their heels for a while so that they can get their reversal and stuff can start coming together.
I think it's more like yesterday's Enterprise.
Mm.
Oh my God, that's a great one.
That's a great episode, yeah.
Yeah.
City on the edge of whatever.
It just kills me that Geordi's wearing the wrong uniform at the end of that episode.
Yeah, I know.
Every time I see it, I'm like, oh man, it's just like that last little
bit. It's just some weird little goof. Yeah. City on the edge of whatever is like, that's what millennials say, Dan. So
it's fine. I'm
glad you turned 40, but you're still a millennial to us.
I reused that joke from an episode of Inconceivable, so I'm going to allow it.
Oh. I like we're even getting the stale jokes.
Yep, that's how it goes.
That's really great.
All right. Other things about this episode? I'm surprised Coulson tries to give his good guy pitch to Nathaniel. I feel like that guy's gone, man. Like, he's not even worth trying to save.
I agree.
You'd think that basically, you know, if you told somebody that, you know, there's somebody is trying to kill everybody, that they might think that following that person and listening to that person would be a bad thing. But, you know, here.
I think that would have worked on Robert Redford, right? Or
maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Even some subsequent
the enemy
Shield
of my
friends.
I think that's part of the thing. That's part of the thing that bugs me about these guys is that they have to be anarchists in order for this to work. Otherwise, they have no reason for help working with Sybil. They're anarchists because that's the only kind of person that would do this.
Yeah. No. I also one interesting point I noted in this episode that I was curious about: of all the things they seem to know, they don't. It's possible they don't realize that Coulson is a robot. They should know that. Sybil should know that because
I think they must know.
They must, but like he puts them in those cuffs and he just breaks them later. And it's like,
yeah, but he's in the room, but he couldn't get out of the room.
Well, he says he's going to knock the door down.
That's the room that Daisy's father was kept in.
Cal was in, yeah,
yeah.
But
so he would not have been able to bust out of that.
Yeah,
I guess Garrett also says he's seen him die 100 times.
That's a good point. They must know what his deal is. It just seemed there was that, and then I was questioning at the end where Cora says to him like, "But I want to go with you" or something, and then he ices her and puts her on the ship, which makes me wonder if that was part of the plan. Like she knew he was going to come find her.
Yeah,
I assume she also knew he was going to take her back to wherever they're going. So I'm not sure how much of that is like she seems to have some hesitance at one point, you know, when Nathaniel tells her to kill Lee, and I guess there's a question. The question is whether or not she can still be redeemed. And I suppose if it turns out that if she finds out that Nathaniel killed her mother, then that might do it. But who knows?
Yeah.
I also don't care that much.
Well, yeah, and I don't care about her that much.
I don't mean to be mean or cruel. Right. Like, it's just, I don't know. I don't know that character that
We aren't given a lot to care about.
Right, and that character...
Like, if we had seen her as a child, when she was talking about her as a child, that made me, care a little bit more, I guess. But you don't care as much when you're just told that as opposed to seeing it.
Right, or if we had known, maybe, if there had been a thing, or maybe there is. John, you've rewatched the show way more than I have, but like if there had been an illusion or hint of this character existing back in season two.
Not so far as I know.
Yeah, then like you do get a great moment where you're like, oh no, her like sister's still alive, right? Like that could be a pretty meaningful moment because we never knew this character existed. It does fall flat because it feels like it was probably a retcon, like... It was probably something they either had in mind but never put on the screen, or they just decided at this late date, like, oh, wouldn't it be interesting if? And it's like, it's hard to do that when you're wrapping up, you know, a 7-season show.
It seems like a weird kind of thing to throw in.
It's a retcon either way.
I almost feel like
introduced it, the fact that we haven't been on the edge of our seats.
I'm on the edge of my sheets.
Depends on where you're watching the show.
Yeah, exactly. It's still a retcon. You know, like, if it's something they tossed out and they're only visiting all these years later, it's not like they've had it on the back burner. It's like they pulled it out of the closet.
Yeah, I think there's a way you could have set that up as a bit of foreshadowing. But yes, you would have had to lay the groundwork, right? Like, you have to put in the time for it to matter.
Yeah, you can't just go A to Z. You've got, there's a few other letters.
The thing that I thought originally when she appeared was that she might be the timing is off, and so I immediately realized it was not this, but that it would be the girl that May had to kill.
Oh, right.
Oh, I thought about that, too.
And she was much younger, though. And it was much later.
Yes, exactly. That's why I really, it was way late. Yeah, it was later and she was much younger.
One of the best episodes.
But the timeline had changed. So I thought maybe she had, had not been killed and grown up a little bit more, but was still dangerous. But anyway.
I do think it's interesting. I mean, the open question, as we've talked about in previous weeks, is what do you do with the timeline? Like, that's what I'm most curious about. That's what I'm most invested in is, like, is there a point where they're like, well, we just let the timeline ride. Like, this is what it is. Do they fix it? Yeah. Does it go back to the MCU timeline? Is it a totally different timeline? I don't know. I'm just interested in how they feel like they want to resolve that, because that is, that seems to be what's at stake here. And it doesn't, I'm not saying that from a perspective of continuity, like, oh, they have to make it line up with the MCU timeline. I don't care about that. No. I'm just curious because I want to know what our characters think is the right answer or whatever. But I will say one thing I did note this week, in terms of our time travel mechanics, is that so Nathaniel kills Jia Ying, but it's not like Daisy suddenly blinks out of existence. So we're not like a Marty McFly situation where killing their parents means that you never exist.
Yeah.
I guess it's more like one of the timeline situations where it's like their past is your future, etc. So, like, you're still going because that all happened for you.
Yeah.
Which follows roughly the Endgame model, I think.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's the same. Yeah. It's consistent. Right. Yeah. I mean, the reason I think that they're going back, I mean, they're still concerned about, like, trying to save people's parents and stuff like that, is just so that those people will exist in this timeline.
Right. Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, like, they wanted to save Jia Ying because they wanted a Daisy to exist in this timeline.
Right. In the same way that, like, even though they, killed Mac's parents, Mac is still alive.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and there's emotional cost to that, too. Like, you don't want to go around thinking, like the timeline flipping stuff may be fun to chat about on a podcast, but it is going to play havoc with your emotional core in real life, right?
Right.
Like, you're going to get flipped out for sure.
Unless that's the story you're trying to tell, right? Like, in which case, fine, but that's not the...
Yeah, but they've got other stories to tell, and, like, they need to elide a little bit of that emotional truth going on. So I guess they address it by, like, we're going to murder all your parents, which seems a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, come on, guys. Yeah. Any other thoughts on this before we move on to the ritual? All right, John?
I'm still giving it a biff, I think. I mean, I don't think it is as good as most of the episodes this season. I've given them all biffs, of course. So, it still lines up for me. There's enough that I enjoyed about it that I still had a good time watching it. And I think it's, it's got some problems, or like it highlights some problems with some of the moving pieces in this season. But I still like watching it, so. I don't know. I still give it a favorable rating.
Still give it a biff. Guy?
Yep.
We had a new listener ask us what the rating system meant because they hadn't watched Arrow. And I was a little frustrated because a running joke on this show is that I explain the rating system over and over again. So, dear reader, whenever you picked up your first issue and you were left out in the cold, that's because I get made fun of constantly for trying to explain this.
So it's John and my fault, is what you're saying.
Yeah, right. Clearly.
Okay, yeah. Just wanted to clarify. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, I want that to be very clear. Any problem in my life is somebody else's fault.
That sounds right.
That's, yeah.
Are you sure you're not an American?
My girlfriend. Oh.
Just keep going. Just keep going.
Don't. Oh, my God. I love you 100 Fahrenheit. Where was it going? Oh, yes. Okay. So the rating system. A lot of it goes back to Arrow season 4, which is... We started in season 3, then we started season 4 is where we kind of loosened up and started making more jokes, I guess. The worst possible rating you can get is Alex, who is a guy that's dating Thea, Oliver Queen's younger sister. And Alex is a campaign dude. I don't know, volunteer for a campaign, for a mayoral campaign.
He's a clipboard wielder, let's just be clear.
He's got a clipboard. He's boring as hell. He's just the worst.
He's middle management.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that's just like, you can't, you dislike him so much you can't even hate him.
The real point is that he's a poorly developed character.
Yes.
Certainly, I'm sure the actor's a nice guy, but whatever.
I've seen him in other stuff, and he's great. Yeah. But that's a terrible character. And he wasn't even interested enough to be a ninja or a DJ. And really,
He did have a clipboard.
That was
in
another of Thea's boyfriends.
He did have a clipboard in like the underground lair of a secret cabal to destroy humanity. And that's the elevation. That's how good you can get as an Alex, is to be the guy that carries a clipboard and checks in that people are in the right houses when all of humanity is going to die. That is the pinnacle of your success, being so boring.
And you work for an evil organization.
Yeah, just being evil with a clipboard. It's just the law. Weird how I'm getting that. Anyway, John Jr., is again from Arrow season 4, I believe. Barry on the Flash runs backwards in time, and our family, Diggle and Lila, they'd had a baby Sarah, who was named after Sarah Lass, who is basically we're all in love with. And I say we just to mostly cover my complete and utter desire for her. Baby Sarah got erased from time and space, and we got replaced with a John Jr. So John Jr., and this was a reader's suggestion, is that you hate him, but you can't really hate him because he's a baby. It's not his fault.
It's not his fault, right?
You can't be angry at it. It's just not his fault.
You can't be mad at a baby.
Yeah, and then we get into Biff. Biff was Biff Conklin, who was on the island in season 4. He is the only, I think, credible and effective henchman that we've ever seen on any of these TV shows. He nails it that Ollie is...
he's smarter than his boss.
He nails it that Ollie is about to disrupt their organization, and he doesn't trust him at all. And he keeps on it. Eventually, he confronts Ollie, and Ollie murders him. And then, because Biff is just the best henchman you could ever have, he comes back as a ghost. And then Ollie murders him again. That's how good Biff is. That's the level of competence that Biff is. So, low level... Alex, actively boring and not competent. John Jr., can't really blame him. It's, not their bag. It's fine. It's in the middle somewhere. And Biff, we're getting into very, very high praise territory.
That's true.
So that's whatever. That's it. If just cut and paste that some other time, because even I'm getting bored of that joke. I feel that this was it's a John Jr. But
okay.
They made a great joke about fascism being back. So it's a level 1 Biff. It pushes it over the wire.
Saved. Wow. One fascist joke and
pulled the rug out.
No,
on
it's
the
a,
John
it's
Jr.
an anti it's an anti-fascist joke. Oh, yes.
Fair. Yeah, let's be clear.
Yeah. It was fine. It was competent. Like I said earlier, I'm still grading on a curve at this point. this show has done better. It can do better. There's only four episodes left. I really wanted this one to land.
Three.
Well, now there's three, but there was four when we started this one. I really wanted it to land. Didn't quite do it for me. I get it. I'm on the edge there. It's a low end biff.
There's a degree of you know, difficulty slash expectation that they're combating here. That's part of the challenge, right? Our expectations are high, not only because of what they've produced this season, but also because of the fact that it's the like final few episodes of the show. Right. So you want to feel like you're going.
Speaking of combat, when has May ever wound up a punch and then ran halfway across the room with her fist in the air, giving the guy time to teleport away?
Yeah.
That was a broken fight scene. They broke the fight scene for the sake of the plot.
Yeah, it wasn't like the best fight they've done. I like that she still has him mostly on the ropes.
As she's engaging in all that, but like the final move is like, I'm gonna lift my fist and run at you and scream.
She really doesn't like Garrett.
I can't blame her. I know. I would have liked to seen her just. I like the idea of the fight. Like, keep him engaged so that he can't concentrate to get out of there. You know?
I will say
and
that.
And then they kind of flubbed it by making her look bad with doing something dumb rather than him, you know, having managed to finagle his way into a breather. You know? They could have flipped over a table and been out of his sight for half a second.
I was a little surprised, I will say, just side note, that Coulson does not recognize Garrett when he's brought in. I figured they had gone back.
He's too young, but...
Yeah. I mean, I think that's there as sort of a narrative device to remind everybody, you know, and not feel dumb about it. But it is still, like, they had known each other for a while, I felt like.
Yeah, so. You could extrapolate back. Like, you couldn't show me a photo of you in high school that I wouldn't be able to pick out of you, you know? Like...
That's what you think. My fake mustache in high school game, it was strong.
Did you really have a mustache in high school?
No. I couldn't even grow a beard until I was almost done with college. Just saying.
I don't know.
All right.
I'm going to go back and Photoshop a bunch of photos.
All right. We're off the rails. I'm gonna side with John on this one. I will say the addition of James Paxton pushes it over the edge onto the Biff territory. I think without John Garrett in this episode, it's perhaps a lot more dull. And so at least bringing him back in is fun, and I am enjoying that aspect of the sort of callback to the earlier parts of the series, but it's not the strongest episode of this season by far. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the other one that I didn't like as much, which I think you guys were more positive on, the one where they're running around the base in the 70s, that I thought was, not the best. But I have high hopes for the rest of the season, so I'm going to give this one a biff. Because it just makes it over the edge there, but I do agree that it was not the strongest episode of the season. Three episodes left. I will say one of them airs next week, but I believe that the last two are airing back to back in 2 weeks. So we'll have our work cut out for us potentially.
So what do you want to do on that week off? Do you want to? You know what would be fun is if we can find all of the Coulson.
Is it a week off? Not a week off. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're airing one next week and then two the week after. Week.
That's correct.
Oh, sorry. They're compressing them rather than.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing the last two episodes back to back in 2 weeks. So.
Wow.
I think that's good. But next week we'll be back to discuss season 7, episode 11, Brand New Day. And hopefully it is a brand new day.
Are we going to do a live show for the double?
That's a possibility. We can probably do that. We'll let everybody know. Check the Twitter feeds and the Slack, the Incomparable Member Slack. If you're a member, we'll probably talk about it there.
I know IMDb is not always correct, but they have them on separate dates. They have this.
Wikipedia has them on the same day, which tends to be 12 fairly
on the
12th
and 13 on the 19th, but.
Yeah, I'll check afterwards, but I think Wikipedia's listings are usually pretty good. They put them in. If they don't know, they just leave them out. And that's based on a third-party site. So Are we going to do... Are we going to cover anything else today? Or I think that might be... I will say, I mean, I will add that I think we all really... I mean, I think we all watched this week's Stargirl and enjoyed it a lot. I think we're going to do a full episode that wraps up this season of Stargirl. So if you've been watching that, tune in a few weeks for us to sort of just do our response to the entire season of it. Because I think that'll be something we'll go into in more depth than we have time for today. Otherwise, I think that's it for this week. So I want to.
I don't know. Batman versus Kilowog.
I'd like to thank my guests, Batman and Kilowog, who both beat John Moltz and Guy English in a fight, because that's obvious. We just knew that. Sorry, guys.
That would definitely happen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. No training and no powers. You guys are kind of screwed.
And just tired all the time.
It's the worst superpower ever.
Oh, I don't know, Dan. Sometimes it feels like so super to just fall asleep.
I think are you talking about death? That sounds bad. Just gently float off.
I don't think that's what he was talking about.
Okay, just checking. I want to thank my cohorts, as always, for being here. John Moltz, appreciate your time.
You guys are my favorite back-to-back episodes.
Aw. That's sweet. It touches me. Guy English, always a pleasure.
I don't like John that much. Do you think we can get somebody else?
Awkward. Anyway, we'll be back next
week.
First
he pulls the rug out on the Alex, and now on the John Jr., and now he's pulling the rug out on me.
Oh, come on.
We're going to need a new rug. All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for reading along. We appreciate your support. If you got any letters that you want us to discuss on the air, you can reach us at biff@theincomparable.com or hit us up on Twitter at biffcast. We'll answer them on the show. And if there's other things, like I said before, we are open to suggestions for things that we might cover post Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since we've got a bit of a break before another show starts up. If you've got some thoughts on that, you know where to find us. But that's all we've got for this week. So we'll see you next time. Good theme song. Doesn't get enough play.
Exactly. It's Bear McCready. It's pretty good.
It's good stuff. Yeah.
It's welded so tightly to the series that it's. I don't know. It hasn't escaped to be its own thing.